Welcome to International Media with me, Amanda Morrow. This week looks at police raids on opposition media outlets in Turkey in the days leading up to parliamentary elections, plus how American cable channel CNBC was slammed over its handling of Wednesday's Republican presidential debate. And we speak to the publishers of a British study linking social media use to mental health issues in children. Turkey is once again heading to the polls today following inconclusive parliamentary elections in June. Over the past few days, Ankara has drawn condemnation from global rights groups when authorities stormed the Istanbul offices of two opposition television stations belonging to the multi-billion dollar Kozi İpek conglomerate. The outlets are accused of financing the US-based Islamic preacher Fethullah Gulen. He's a bitter rival of President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and Ankara labels him a terrorist. Police fired tear gas and water cannon to disperse protesters outside the premises of Kanal Türk and Buin TV, while television footage showed officers using chainsaws to smash through the media compound's gates. At the scene, Abdulhamid Balişi, editor of the Gulen-affiliated Zaman newspaper, spoke to Reuters TV.
It is very clear, in one sentence, this is a coup against opposition, against free media, against our existing constitution, and against freedom of enterprise. This is clear. The coups doesn't happen only by tanks or by generals. Now we are witnessing a different coup under a civilian umbrella, and this will not be acceptable.
The move against Kozi İpek follows a court ruling for the media group's seizure. Ankara's chief prosecutor's office says the raids are linked to an investigation into suspicion that Kozi İpek is involved in terror financing and terror propaganda, claims the company denies. Jim Bumela is the president of the International Federation of Journalists, which is critical of Turkey's clampdown on opposition media. He says this isn't the first time the government has used accusations of terror to silence opponents.
The authorities in Turkey have been using very drastic anti-terror legislation in order to put pressure on journalists and make it difficult for them to get involved in normal matters of public interest, including the Kurdish issue, which is very sensitive, and also kind of a human rights violation and the armed conflict in Syria. So it's not just this particular outrage. There have been other cases where there were violent attacks on journalists and media outlets. Hürriyet, which is a mainstream newspaper, was attacked twice by angry mobs. And when we take some of the news agency, like the DİHA agency, which is a Kurdish one, they had their website blocked, in fact, more than 20 times this summer by the Turkish telecommunication authorities without any form of judicial review. So what's happened in the last few days is only one of the whole series of outrage perpetrated by the Turkish authorities on media.
When allegations of corruption levelled against allies of Erdogan emerged in December 2013, the president said they were a plot orchestrated by supporters of Gulen to topple him. Ankara has been cracking down on Gulen's followers ever since. Critics accuse the government of trying to quash dissent ahead of today's vote, which opinion polls say is unlikely to deliver Erdogan's Justice and Development Party the clear victory it's hoping for. Bumela warns these latest raids so close to an election risk undermining the integrity of the electoral process.
We have to see in the context of the pressure on journalists that has severely escalated in the period between the parliamentary election held on 7th of June and the upcoming election. So on the whole, this pressure has significantly impacted journalists' ability to report on matters of public interest, and it is having a negative impact on the ability of voters in Turkey to receive and to share the necessary information in the run-up to the election.
Turkey faces many challenges going into these elections, increasing attacks from the Islamic State militant group, violence with Kurdish militants, and the financial burden of the Syrian refugees. Well, let's cross the globe now to the United States, where preparations are underway ahead of another election. The Republican debate in the race for the party's presidential ticket was aired on CNBC this week, but it soon became a debate about the network itself as various candidates and the audience turned the tables on the CNBC's three moderators. Texas Senator Ted Cruz took issue with the way one moderator phrased a question on the budget deal struck by President Barack Obama and Congress. Cruz was asked if his opposition to the deal showed that he's, quote, not the kind of problem solver the American voters want. This was his reply, met by hearty applause.
The questions that have been asked so far in this debate illustrate why the American people don't trust the media. This is not a cage match. And you look at the questions, Donald Trump, are you a comic book villain? Ben Carson, can you do math? John Kasich, will you insult two people over here? Marco Rubio, why don't you resign? Jeb Bush, why have your numbers fallen? How about talking about the substantive issues people care about?
Does this count? Do we get credit for this one?
And Carl, I'm not finished yet. The contrast with the Democratic debate, where every fawning question from the media was, which of you is more handsome and wise?
So this is a question about the debt limit, which you have 30 seconds left to answer, should you choose to do so.
Let me be clear. The men and women on this stage have more ideas, more experience, more common sense than every participant in the Democratic debate. That debate reflected a debate between the Bolsheviks and the Mensheviks. And nobody watching at home believes that any of the moderators has any intention of voting in a Republican primary. The questions that are being asked shouldn't be trying to get people to tear into each other.
Well, following the debate, the chairman of the Republican National Committee said that CNBC should feel ashamed. On Twitter, four of the top five moments involved times when candidates criticised the moderators or the media. And on Facebook, the top social moment was an attack on the questions being asked. In response, CNBC Vice President of Communications Brian Steele said that people who want to be President of the United States should be able to answer tough questions. Finishing now with a look at a British study that has drawn a link between the length of time children spend on social websites and mental health problems. It's no secret that social media sites are popular with young people, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat and Instagram to name just a few. The Office of National Statistics in the UK looked at several factors governing the mental health of kids aged between 10 and 15, and it linked long periods of time spent on social media sites with mental health issues. Rachel O'Brien, a researcher with the ONS, explains.
The research that we carried out looked at some of the factors associated with children's mental health, and one of the things was time spent on social media websites. We found that around 1 in 8 children in the UK had some symptoms of mental ill health. And one of the factors associated with that was time spent on social media, and that children who were spending more than 3 hours on a normal school night were around twice as likely to experience some symptoms of mental ill health.
So what types of symptoms are we talking about?
Well, the way in which we measured this was based on a set of questions which were asked to children. So this is what children have told us. And it was a set of questions specifically designed and tested for use with children to measure their overall mental ill health. So it covered a range of things like emotional symptoms, conduct problems, problems with their peer relationships, maybe friends at school, or if they had any symptoms of hyperactivity or inattention. So it was quite a broad range of questions which overall captured and gave a measure or a score of their mental ill health.
O'Brien also points out that social media can have a positive effect on a child's mental health through helping them to form relationships and to connect with others. But she warns that excessive time spent on social media brings with it concerns of cyberbullying and isolation, adding that more research is needed in this area in order for the impacts of social media on children's well-being to be fully understood. And that brings us to the end of this week's International Media with me, Amanda Morrow.